Now, here is an interview with author William Cooper.
So, Mr. Cooper, are there larger numbers of people all the time who are receptive to your message and who are thinking a little bit more deeply and critically about these fundamental issues of government and politics that perhaps they did not give as much thought to in the past?
Oh, yes. In fact, I never dreamed that I would make such an impact. When I first began what I'm doing now, which was many years ago, I was lucky if I could travel 1,000 miles and collect 3 people in somebody's living room, none of whom, by the way, would help me pay for expenses or anything else, to sit down and listen to what I had to say. And I did this many times, travel all the way across the country, just to talk to 2 or 3 or 4 people in somebody's home and put all the expenses myself. And now I can go to someplace like the Salt Dome in Salt Lake City and fill the place up with people who want to come and hear what I have to say. I think the radio broadcast has had a lot to do with it. My book has certainly been the number one underground book in the country for the last 8 or 9 years, and continues to be today. And I know that I'm really hitting the mark, and I'm really making people pay attention when the President of the United States, William Jefferson Clinton, names me in a White House memo, which Rush Limbaugh read on the air, as being the most dangerous radio host in America. To me, that was the most tremendous compliment that I could ever receive. It was worth more than $50 million, in my estimation. And if I don't ever do anything more than what I've accomplished, I certainly have accomplished quite a bit in the way of waking up the average American to stop believing everything that he's told or taught and start questioning and using his own mind for something other than to hold up the top of his head. And I think that's happening. I think people are beginning to question and think and arrive at their own conclusions today a lot more than they ever have in history. Trusting people is what got us in this situation. And the concept, the whole concept that imperfect man can rule other imperfect men, and it's going to turn out all right, is the most ludicrous proposition that I've ever heard in my life.
I think there are a number of people that agree with what you say, who are aware of some of these facts. Again, the question to ask is, given that there may be ills and abuses on the part of the government today, what would be something that a person interested in seeing change could do? What sort of advice would you give somebody who wanted to have an effect for the better, who would want to influence events so that we would begin moving towards a change?
There are only 2 possible avenues of change at the present time. One is civil war, which we are heading toward. Right now, we're rushing toward a civil war in this country. And I foresee that is probably the most reasonable expectation that we can see happening. Not that I want it to happen. Not that a civil war is reasonable. But it's the reasonable conclusion after looking at the whole picture. The other is that we could somehow really educate the vast majority of what I call the American sheeple. These are people who are ignorant. Ignorant is not a bad word. It just means that they're without knowledge. If we could educate them and get them to understand that it is more important to stand up now and take a personal risk and educate other people and say that this has all got to stop, and be able to select our own candidates and make sure they get elected, no matter what the press or the television or anybody else tells us about them. Put them in office, people who will support, protect, and defend the Constitution, like the liars and the charlatans who are in office now swear to do when they take their oath of office, but don't at all. Don't even attempt it, in fact. If you could get the people to do that, then there might be a possibility of a political, peaceful solution. But I can tell you right there, that's not going to happen. It's not going to happen in your wildest dreams, because most people spend the first 21 years of their life trying to get away from daddy and get away from home and become responsible and have their own responsibility in life. They spend the rest of their life, once they find out what that really means, in trying to find a daddy that will take care of them and take all the risk away from them and make sure that they have a job and that their diapers are changed and they have a bed to sleep in at night and a place to play and all of that kind of stuff, just like every other child in the world. And to stand up and be responsible and take a risk means that they're not going to find that. That's why socialism is so attractive to the vast majority of any people, not just Americans, but any people. It promises that they're going to have a daddy again who's going to take care of them. If they'll just give up all their rights and all their liberties, daddy will take care of them. And so that's what people are looking for. And you can see it in your daily life. That's the way they vote. That's what they want. They don't want to take personal responsibility. They don't want to take a risk. They're afraid of getting on a list. I've had people tell me to my face, Bill, I know all about this stuff, but I can't help you because I don't want to get on anybody's list.
Is it different anywhere else then, Bill? Because this question brings me to something I wanted to ask you anyway, and that is, in looking over other countries in the world, do you find any other countries with social or political models, even if it's only some aspect of their system, that you find worth emulating in other countries? Any other country or countries that you think go about the political process or the social contract, if you will, in a way superior to the United States?
No, I don't, as a matter of fact. Up until we began to take this left turn into socialism, the United States was the great light of the world, so to speak. We were the only free people who had ever existed in the entire history of humanity. We like to talk about our great heritage from England. The English were never free. They're not free today. They don't have freedom of speech. They don't have any of the freedoms that we've always had and cherished. In the history of the whole human race, the only people that have ever lived on this planet who have ever truly been free, the ultimate achievement of all humankind was to accept the individual as a king or queen in his or her own right, being responsible and having all of the freedom and liberties that they could possibly imagine right here in this country. And we created a government that was supposed to have a balance of power and was limited, strictly limited by the Constitution, and only given a very few powers in order to protect the freedom of the common man. That's all gone now. I mean, that's like a big, you hear these politicians in Washington today talking about how the Constitution is an outdated document penned over 200 years ago by a bunch of doddering old men who did not understand the complexities of the modern age. They won't tell you what you should already know, is that the document is not an outdated old document. It is a living Constitution. It has within it the means for change should the people desire that it be changed. But the people don't desire that, so they just go ahead and throw it in the trash can anyway and go about their business doing anything that they want to do, while Joe Blow on the street doesn't even know that it's happening because he's never read the document that guarantees his freedom in his whole life.
So, Mr. Cooper, given the controversial nature of so many of the things that you have studied with regard to government and the law and the abuses thereof, tell us a little bit about how it has affected your personal life. You're a family man with two children. What kind of impact has the work you've done had on your family?
Well, that's quite an interesting question and that doesn't get asked very much, but it's had a tremendous effect. If you want to find out how quickly society can turn against one, and I'm talking seriously here, stand up and tell the truth about just anything that you want to stand up and tell the truth about. It scares the living daylights out of everyone. And so the first thing that happens is you find out who your friends are and who your friends are not, because there's a great weeding out there. And it's not anything that you do on your part or that I've done on my part. They just disappear. And you find very quickly that people are afraid to be around you because they can see the government being upset about what you're talking about. And they can see repercussions coming, and of course they have happened and will continue to happen. And ultimately, I really believe that there will be some kind of a terminal point where they decide that they're not just not going to put up with this pest anymore, and that's going to be the end of me. We have been literally financially in the ditch. We have found it impossible to get any kind of a normal job with anyone who knows anything about what I do. It's you can't go to church, you can't go to cocktail parties because everybody else is sitting around talking about the weather or, oh, what school did you go to? And when you have done the research and arrived at some of the answers that I know to be true now, those people become like kindergarten children. They're not in the real world, and I can't engage in that kind of a conversation. So you really find yourself in another world that has nothing to do with all of the rest of the people who are running around engaged in their activities that they think are so important then. And to them, they really are. But to me, they've lost the reality of what really is important, and they're about to lose their freedom to even discover those things at this point.
I ask you a last question, and that is, how would you like to be seen or remembered in future years when people look back and you think about the thrust of your work? What is it that you would like to be best remembered for?
I think I would like to be remembered like Paul Revere was remembered. At a time when it was needed and nobody else would do it, I got on my horse and rode through the night and said, the British are coming. And this time it's not the British. Although there's an element of the British here, because England is a socialist country. I'm sure you know that. That's all. I'm not looking for any fame or any fortune. You certainly don't get rich doing what I'm doing. And infamous is probably the real word that describes what happens to you as far as public recognition in a world where political correctness is the theme of the day. You just don't do what I'm doing. So if anybody wants to remember me, I would certainly be pleased if they just remembered I did what was the responsible and the right thing to do at a time when nobody else had the guts to do it.
Well, Cooper, thank you for your time.
You're welcome.